This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with Adam Knapp, the president and CEO of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber. He's coming up on 6 years as head of BRAC, and we will talk with Adam about today perhaps being the last day of L.A. Swift and other matters, some far more encouraging than this, some economic development of significance in our community, and much more with Adam Knapp. Also, journalist Rich Cohen, he's a graduate of Tulane University. He writes frequently for the likes of Rolling Stone and Vanity Fair, and he has a piece in the National Geographic about sugar and Americans' addiction to sugar and how it's causing a colossal health problem in this country and elsewhere. Rich Cohen. All this, but now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It's 877-217-5757. Adam Knapp, the president and CEO of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber since April of 2008, is with us. And Adam always is on the front lines of what's happening in our community. And today could be the end of the trail, the last ride for L.A. Swift. What do you think?
Well, it's an unfortunate circumstance, Jim. The service is increasingly popular on its last day. It's been increasing in ridership over the last year, and the data that we've been getting from the folks at DOTD, they're up to about 12,500 trips that are taken, paid trips that are taken every month, around 150,000 trips sold a year. They're riding at about $5 each way. And that service, unfortunately, is going to discontinue for lack of match for a federal grant that's out there that could be used to extend it. And that's where it stands today, is it will go out of service, and hopefully there'll be an effort to revive it.
Can that effort, can it make progress? Can it happen?
It can. The folks at DOTD have been very helpful in outlining a path on how that can happen. They have made clear, and we agree with them, that there are not state dollars to come in and provide for match. We've seen that the state is in a terrible budget mess, as we saw during the last legislative session, and that it is really a regional, super-regional transit service, and look to the regions to provide for that service as much as possible. To do so, what DOTD has outlined is a path, what can start today, for a local entity to come out, come forward and apply for this grant of federal funds from the state, who have the ability to do that, and then put together match to go out and restart the service. In the timeline that DOTD has outlined, that would probably take till about the end of October. So you'd be expecting that service could potentially restart as early as November 1st, if all of these pieces come together and if a local partner is willing to come forward.
And there's no guarantee that of this will happen. And about 1 million people have used L.A. Swift since its inception after Hurricane Katrina. According to a survey that was conducted recently, 51% to use it to get to and from work, 44% ride to visit family and friends, 14% use it for access to healthcare services, and 32% of the riders do not have a car. So it seems like it is a worthy endeavor, and the cost, only $750,000 a year. That's real money, but in a state with a budget that exceeds $25 billion, why couldn't the state come up with the money?
Well, Jim, as I said, we really weren't expecting that the state was going to come up with the resources to do the match. They had made that clear early on that they were going to be looking for partners to find these resources. So in the last two or three months, they've been reaching out to look for local partners to come forward. In our efforts to work with other organizations between Greater New Orleans, Inc. and BRAC and Center for Planning Excellence, members of the legislature who were willing to help find community partners, all of the parish presidents in the metro area, almost all the parish presidents, I should say, we had endorsements from Mayor Holden, who stepped out in a big way to endorse it, and the Metro Council in Baton Rouge, the City Council in New Orleans, and the mayor in New Orleans, Jefferson Parish, Ascension Parish, letters of support throughout the corridor for the need for this service. And what we saw is there were ways that you could come up with match that we're able to close that gap smaller than that $750,000 number. And in the path to getting it restarted in November, if that's possible, Jim, what we think is going to happen is other partners will have to come forward with some amount of match. And I want to just say a word of compliment to you and this organization. Y'all came in and other media companies came in and donated and offered to donate in-kind airtime and the promotion of the extension of the service. We had raised commitments of in-kind advertising of around $170,000, $180,000 from 15 or 16 companies who said that they really wanted to see this service continue. They heard about it from their employees. They heard about it from their advertisers. They saw it as a value. And one way that we could reduce the amount of match necessary is to cut out expenses for advertising out of their contract. And that was something that media companies were willing to donate, which was a very generous statement. It wasn't, unfortunately, enough to close the full gap, but we do expect, if it can be extended, that will be one way it's done.
Right. And this was from the Louisiana Radio Network, which, of course, is a commercial endeavor. And you had many other commercial partners who were trying to help the cause. But didn't the feds spank the local authorities on some of the mechanisms used to get to the $750,000?
They did. They identified that the a couple of the items that came forward, primarily donated services from the provider of the service, the company Hotard that operates Elias Swift, the feds said that it would be ineligible to count things that they were doing but not charging for as part of the in-kind services that were being counted. That was something that we had had some suggestion from others in that had dealt with the FTA that that would be something that would be possible. Unfortunately, it was not the case in the way that it was read by FTA officials.
297-5633 for Adam Knapp, President and CEO of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber. Bruce in Walden, you're on the air with Mr. Knapp.
Yeah, hello, gentlemen. Speaking of turning down vast amounts of money, I wanted to bring you back to the Medicaid expansion. I run a mid-sized business and represent about 500 agencies in a similar situation. With the Medicaid expansion, we do great. Most of our people are covered. Without it, we go out of business. So I'm hoping business organizations will rally and advocate for the mid-sized businesses that are going to be crushed thanks to Jindal's decision.
All right, that's a different topic, but back to L.A. Swift. 27% of L.A. Swift riders are Medicaid eligible. The people using this, 81% African American, 74% from households with less than $40,000 in income. People using this are doing it out of necessity. It's not a luxury. They're not trying to save a few bucks by riding a bus to New Orleans and back. What's going to happen to these people, Adam?
That's a great question, and unfortunately, I think you're hearing an outpouring of concern for those riders that are using it regularly. But it is both those who need it and also those who want it. What we saw with the 51% riding it for to get to work, this is a way that we can see that more workers will be able to access jobs, especially all of the economic activity that is happening in the corridor in between Baton Rouge and New Orleans and the Saints and the parishes, the river parishes. You see a lot of economic development projects along the river corridor, and this was going to be an important means for getting more workers to their jobs. We have a demand for somewhere around 35,000 construction workers in the next few years to build all of the economic development projects that have come, and access to more workers is going to be a critical piece of this, and more transportation services are necessary.
297-5633 is your number outside the area. It's 877-217-5757. We'll get to a few other topics with Adam Knapp, but today is the last ride as we know it for L.A. Swift. When does the final bus leave? Do you know?
I don't know. That's a great question. But there are 16 routes running a day, so it'll be late in the day, I'm guessing.
HB in Denham Springs. Hi, HB. You're on the air with Adam Knapp. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Mr. Knapp, I don't even know if this is on the radar, but it's tied in with what you were just talking about with L.A. Swift and the economy. In the last 10 years, do you have any facts or figures as to how much inflation, as well as increase in taxes on a state, local, and federal level, has affected the middle class and the retired people of this state? Thank you, sir.
Unfortunately, I don't have any statistics on the effect of inflation. I'd love to see them if you have them, if you want to share them with us. We'd be interested in reading what you found. What we've seen is more economic activity in the last couple of years. We saw in the overall economy a decline during the recession, and the economy is rebounding. We're actually forecasting, and this, the data that's most recently out last Friday continues to show this, that the metro area economy is overall rebounding, and the number of jobs that are in the metro area could come in around 2% job growth by the end of the year, and expected to be more than that next year.
Adam Knapp, named president and CEO of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber in 2008, native of Lake Charles, previously served as deputy director of the Louisiana Recovery Authority. And he is on the front burner of business development in this area. And since we last visited with you, there have been some significant announcements in addition to the IBM one. How's it looking as far as the business climate in this community?
So we're wrapping up the month of July today, right? So this is an interesting fact, Jim. We are looking at the number of projects that have announced this year, the number of jobs announced through projects this year, and the amount of capital investment. For the total year last year through projects we saw worked in the nine parish metro area, there were 1,100 jobs, a little more than 1,100 jobs, and $78 million in new annual payroll through the permanent jobs announced. As of just July, we're at 1,779 jobs, almost 1,800 jobs announced through economic development projects, and almost $90 million, about $89 million in announced new payroll just through July. So this is an incredibly active year in economic development, a very successful one. What you're seeing is actually rankings that continue to come out. We're expecting in another one late this week or early next week. Southern Business and Development is a magazine that looks at economic development in the South. For the first time ever, they ranked the Baton Rouge area as the number one metro major market in the South for economic development activity. That's something we've been honorable mention on in the past, but as a major market, it's an incredible ranking. New Orleans got a honorable mention. Lake Charles had great mention. So we see a corridor of economic development activity in South Louisiana that is at its peak.
Charles in North Baton Rouge. Charles, good morning. You're on with Adam.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Adam. I just wanted to say with this L.A. Swift, this is truly a tragedy. We have Sharon Weston, who's a representative for this area. She slipped $1 million into the last budget to tear down Earl K. Long. We have an empty woman's hospital that the city borrowed $11 million to pay for, doing nothing with it. And unlike Mississippi, Louisiana is paying lawyers hand over foot to roll BP when Mississippi is using staff attorneys from their attorney general's office. I mean, this state just proves to me over and over again, it is as crooked as the river that flows through this city.
Are we as crooked as the river that flows through Baton Rouge? Charles, with a little way with words there on North Foster.
Very, very poetically said. I think the fact of the state budget mess that we just came through is a tough observation. I know that the legislature wrestled with it for the entirety of the legislative session to try to find a way to get a balanced budget, and there are many feeling like it probably was too messy in how they got to the end of it. Is there waste in state government is the generally the question. I think there's plenty of points that I think people could point to that would be places that cuts could be made. The state made it absolutely clear, mm-hmm. however, they were not going to be able to come up with resources out of the Department of Transportation and Development budget for the L.A. Swift. And given those parameters, we worked toward a solution with non-state dollars. That's where our engagement
right.
has been focused.
The state gave you no choice, but perhaps the state should have. Of those riders, 15% in health care and social assistance, 13% construction, 11% in educational services, and 11% in accommodation and food services. This is economic development, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Do we think that it would be great if they had? Absolutely. This started in June, toward the end of the legislative session, when the call was being made to try to find resources. If you remember, the department made clear that they were going to end service at the end of June, in early June, and only provided an extension when it looked like there might be a path to getting enough match put together from non-state sources. But they made clear basically at the end of the legislative session that they were not going to have resources to provide for the match. And those were the cards we were dealt.
We'll take a short break, and we'll talk with Adam Knapp about a few other items when we return. 297-5633 or 877-217-5757. Adam Knapp, president and CEO of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber since April of 2008. And he has bullish news on the economy, but today is a sad day with perhaps the last ride for L.A. Swift. And Adam has said it will be the end of the trail, at least until November. We'll be back after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Adam Knapp, president, CEO of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber, is in-house, graduate of Davidson in North Carolina. He came back home, though, and has done a job that most give him plaudits for. Although today, Adam, to his credit, comes forth on a day when we don't have good news. We've got the end of L.A. Swift. $10 back and forth to New Orleans, that's a hard deal to beat, especially for people who are working on a shoestring budget.
You know, it was the only, it is, till the end of the today, I should say, the only commuter service, regular commuter service for transit between the two metros, 16 trips a day, 10 on weekends, and you saw a diversity of folks that used it for all sorts of purposes, students, folks seeking health care, and especially folks seeking access to work.
And handicapped people in particular. This Absolutely. Gave them an opportunity to travel to New Orleans and back in a way that they may not be able to otherwise. Molly downtown. Hi, Molly. You're on the air with Adam.
Hi. I know this may be a little off topic you're talking about today, but first I want to say Adam has done an absolute fantastic job since he has taken over at the Chamber, and that's from a crazy liberal. I think he's done a really good job. But my question is there any move with IBM and so much of these things coming downtown to get a grocery store downtown? I love going to the farmer's market. I'll continue going to the farmer's market, but it would be really great if there was sort of a full-size grocery store or bodega that really, you know, serviced the area.
Grocery store. We have Capital Grocery, by the way. And there's a new store right at the corner of Florida and 3rd Street in the building where I worked for 20 years, State National Life Building. But a full-fledged grocery store, Adam. We're going to have that in downtown Baton Rouge, a major supermarket.
It's a little out of our bailiwick. I'd encourage you to check with the folks at the Downtown Development District, which is more in their line of work. Yeah, I was going to say, I know of the two that you just mentioned, Jim, and I don't know of efforts to do others. Mm-hmm. I know it's something that is widely desired is to see more of a larger grocery store. But the right. one that you just mentioned that's been opened at 3rd and Florida has been the one most recently touted. And I know that the folks at the right. the downtown grocery in Spanish Town are making some efforts to change the store and improve it.
A listener notes that Calandro's is only a couple of miles away on Government, and there are others that are not that far away.
That's right.
And downtown. And you're on with Adam. Hi.
Yes. I wanted to ask Mr. Knapp what BRAC is doing to assist LSU since Governor Jindal has pretty much decimated them. I'll take my answer off the air.
What about LSU? What are you doing?
Great question, and we view and have viewed LSU as one of the most important, if not the most important, economic development asset for the future growth of the Baton Rouge area, and we've viewed policy around LSU as a critical facet of our policy efforts. We've advocated for higher education actively over the last 3 or 4 years at the session, especially. One of the things we did most importantly and most recently was to look at the revenue sources for higher education that LSU gets by comparison to other major research universities, looking at the South, looking at a peer group of organizations outside of the South as well. So I'd direct the listener or any other listeners that want more information on this to our website. If you go to www.brac.org, BRAC.org. One of the things we've seen as a significant difference in the revenues for LSU by comparison to other major research universities is the sources coming from tuition and fees. The lowest sort of all of the numbers, it looks like it's that there's a lot of room to get to a Southern average for how much is generated from tuition and fees. And the legislature in Louisiana is one of the few in the country that has a requirement for a 2/3 vote to increase tuition, where most universities are at the whim of their boards to be able to compete based on what market rates look like. And so that, because of that, you see lower tuition in Louisiana, where that would be a significant source of additional revenue. The report that just came out from the LSU board, the LSU 2015 effort, points to many, many other ways that LSU can generate revenue and that it should be considering. And we're hearing positive statements out of the new president that he is looking at those as well.
You went to high school where, Adam?
At Barb High School in Lake Charles,
good,
Louisiana.
Good public high school. Always has good athletic teams, or at least did in when I was covering it. But did you consider going to LSU?
I did. I was able to follow my sister, who went to school in North Carolina, and she had, while dropping her off at college, found Davidson, and it was great. We had a great visit to it, and it was something that I was very impressed with.
Well, it's a great school. I used to have an outstanding basketball team under Lefty Drizel. Bo Jones, son of Bert, went to Davidson University.
The number of Davidson grads in Baton Rouge recently doubled when Bo returned to Baton Rouge.
And he's a big supporter of L.A. Swift, so hopefully Bo is okay with what's happened, but I think a lot of people are disappointed, and for good reason. Now, you are involved, as I said, in many things. The Canvas trip this year, where are you going?
We're going to the Central Florida super region of Orlando and Tampa, and this is a great relation to the LA Swift project itself. I think the goal for our trip is to explore ways that super regional partnerships between two metro areas that neighbor each other, how can those be enhanced? Our business community has been deeply committed to this post-Katrina. We saw our business leaders work closely with business leaders from the metro area of New Orleans, North Shore, Jefferson, and throughout the 10 parish area there. So we decided this would be an interesting idea, is to actually go on a trip together, the two business communities, forge closer bonds between the business people of the two regions, and learn from examples of things that they have done in both markets to work together. We're going to be looking at transportation issues with relevance to LA Swift, and they had also made efforts to try to build more rail connections and transit connections between Tampa and Orlando. We're going to look at crime issues, both of which are significant in our two markets, and also at healthcare development as an opportunity for more economic development around that industry sector, something that both markets are very interested in. Okay. I'd actually encourage folks, if they're interested and want to attend and join us on the trip, go to our website, again, brac.org. You can find out more about how to register.
That's in November, correct?
It is November 3rd through 5th.
That's the weekend LSU plays Alabama, right?
It's a Sunday through a Tuesday.
It's the day after, I think. Yeah, you'll be leaving. Of course, LSU will be in Tuscaloosa this year. A couple of other items. The Cats situation, it's a mess right now. You fought mightily for that tax approval, and what's going on regarding this entity.
It is a mess, and I think everybody in general has been shocked at how bad the situation is and how bad it's gotten. The board, whether they all resign or some resign, there needs to be governance changes to the leadership there. We have been interested and supportive of seeing outsource management. They've considered an RFP for some amount of outsource management for the operations of CATS. We think that that would be something that they should strongly consider. The concern that everybody has raised is without board leadership with deep expertise in transit, without management with deep expertise in transit, bringing in outside help is something that a lot of markets, El Paso, even New Orleans, again, back to our super region partners over there, have done, is to look for outsource management for help. And that could be something that they can do fairly quickly to reinstill some confidence that they're moving in the right direction. In general, the need remains for good services, as we have seen in the case for what is broken at CATS that the election raised. The major issue here is that governance has never been fixed. It was something that the Blue Ribbon Commission pointed out in 2011 and remains a broken issue.
Yesterday on this show, the Councilman John Delgado announced that he would be pushing an ordinance against any kind of discrimination based on race, orientation, or creed. Today it's front page news in The Advocate. Would you be supportive of this?
The ordinance, I have to look at the article. I haven't seen the paper yet this morning, but the ordinance, as we heard it yesterday, looks pretty expansive. We actually have looked at other places with where Canvas trips have gone And a lot of the communities, if not all of the communities, have some amount of ordinance, some ordinance related to the city parish or the parish or the county, and how their hiring practices look at sexual orientation. That's something that we expressed support of before. It's been a position of the organization that that discrimination of that kind is not shouldn't be tolerated in those kinds of public agencies. And that's something that you see a lot of other communities have adopted. East Baton Rouge Parish already has an executive order that doesn't allow for discrimination based on sexual orientation. I think the major question is, will they take that executive order and codify it into an ordinance?
But based on what you know, you would be in favor of something like this if it's similar to what you've seen on these canvas strips?
If that's all it does is take the executive order and codify it into an ordinance, that's something that we'd been in favor of before and think is a good idea.
Why is this such a big deal in our community?
It's a great question. I think it's a hot topic. I mean, this is something that we see in the paper regularly these days as a challenging issue. In the private sector, you see it, many companies deal with it on their own in their hiring practices as a way to attract talent that they want to make sure that they are demonstrating tolerance to the community, to their potential employees. The company that most recently coming to Baton Rouge, IBM, has been a leader in this effort, and that's been highlighted by many others during this debate in Baton Rouge. And that's something that I think that you're going to see the private sector has been leading on. The communities that we've visited have also gone that way in their own practices, their own discrimination policies. The issue of non-discrimination, I think, was put to it many years ago. In civil rights era, this is something that we expect just needs to catch up and take the executive order that was written under Mayor Simpson and renewed by Mayor Holden and then make it into an ordinance this time. It seems like it's long overdue to make that into an ordinance.
Do you think there'll be a big fight over this?
Well, it depends on what's drafted into it. I think as long as it's straightforward to codify the executive order, it should be pretty straightforward that this is something that they already follow as practice.
Well, I saw today in the story by Rebecca Allen as a follow-up to yesterday's discussion on this show. Tara Wicker, councilwoman, says she will not support the ordinance. So I would imagine we'll have the same kind of hot debate among the council members that we had over the resolution. And an ordinance, of course, has a lot more teeth than a resolution, which doesn't have any teeth at all.
If I understand the things that are proposed, it's different from the resolution about One Baton Rouge, Jim. They are looking at this issue of non-discrimination in hiring practices, which is a bit different.
Yeah, but it's along the same lines as far as trying to thwart discrimination in this community.
Sure.
Thank you, Adam. Good to visit with you as always, and sorry it's been a bad day for L.A. Swift, but I'm sure there will be better days for you and our community.
Thank you, Jim, and anything the community can do to help us push that would be great.
Thank you, sir. And we're joined now by a nationally recognized writer of nonfiction, Rich Cohen, who has the cover story in the National Geographic magazine in August called Sugar Love. And good morning to you, Rich.
Good morning.
And you're a graduate of Tulane, correct?
Class of 1990.
Class of 1990. So you know New Orleans quite well as a native of Illinois.
Yeah.
And Rich is a fascinating man. We'll get to Sugar Love, but you grew up in the Chicago suburbs, and your dad is a person, Herb Cohen, quite close to Larry King.
That's right. My dad grew up in Brooklyn, and he grew up down the street from Larry, who was then Larry Zeiger. And Larry Zeiger's father died when he was a little kid, and he ended up spending a lot of time in my father's family's house with my grandfather. So sort of known him since I was a kid. And then I went to Tulane. I just wrote a book about Sam Zimurry, who was sort of, you know, ran United Fruit, lived in the big house on St. Charles, which is now the president's house of Tulane. And you can still see the United Fruit building on you know, in uptown New Orleans. I mean, right across from the French Quarter.
So
when I was a kid, Larry used to do a show from New Orleans sometimes, and I would be with him in New Orleans. It was really fun.
He might have inspired you to be a journalist.
Maybe. He gave me a lot of, he always talked about a good way to interview people, which is, he told me a story about how Sandy Koufax was interviewing a guy after he pitched a no-hitter and asked so many technical questions that all the pitcher said at the end of the interview was, yes. And then he realized that he was not a good interviewer.
And Sandy Koufax grew up with Larry King as well in Brooklyn.
They all grew up in Bensonhurst, which is at the end of the subway line on, near the Sheepshead Bay in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm. Well, you wrote in 1998, Tough Jews.
Yeah.
So you started early. I guess you were just short of 30 years old when Tough Jews came out.
Uh-huh, I was 29, and that book, see, my father used, I grew up in on the North Shore of Chicago, and my father would tell me these stories about gangsters in his neighborhood in Bensonhurst and East New York, and they were Jewish gangsters because it was a Jewish neighborhood, and I just thought that those stories were like, they were my bedtime stories, and they were about guys like Abe Relis and TikTok Tannenbaum and Happy Levine, and I love those stories so much that I wanted to sort of go investigate and write a whole book about them.
That's not an easy topic. You talk about investigative work. Sometimes when you get involved in something like this, you can put your own neck on the line.
Well, I always made a habit when writing about gangsters to not writing about ones that are still alive. I mean, the guys that I wrote about had died in the electric chair in the 1940s. So even though my grandmother thought they still posed a threat to me, I didn't believe they would.
How did you end up at Tulane, Rich?
My sister went to Tulane, and my parents used to just send me down to visit her when I was 10, 11 years old, and I would just spend weeks sort of on my own on every school vacation wandering around New Orleans. The first professional football game I ever saw was a game between the Saints and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers when Archie Manning was a quarterback of the Saints and Doug Williams was the quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I just sort of fell in love with the city. Just because it's such a great city, and also if you come there from Chicago in February, you feel like you've gone to heaven. You know, in Chicago, it'd be like 20 below, and you couldn't step outside your house.
And your book that is forthcoming is called Monsters, the 1985 Chicago Bears and the Wild Heart of Football. The Bears, of course, won the Super Bowl in January of 86 in New Orleans.
In New Orleans, and I was 17, and I was down there for that Super Bowl. It was actually when I interviewed at Tulane was taking time away from sort of walking around dressed in my Jim McMahon jersey. I mean, to really understand why the Bears were such a big deal for Chicagoans, you have to know that a common T-shirt in Chicago says in big letters, Chicago Cubs World Champs, and a little tiny number is 1908. So it's not, there's not, there was Michael Jordan came after, but there really was not a lot of winning teams coming out of Chicago. And so the Bears won, and they won in such a decisive way. They won that Super Bowl against the Patriots 46-10. That it sort of suddenly made you think, oh, winning is something that is possible. And I sort of credit that team with making me have a decent life.
We hopefully will talk with you about Monsters, the 1985 Chicago Bears, when that book comes out. And you talk about an assortment of characters. What a team. Not only talent, but some real individuals.
Yep, that was Peyton and McMahon and Ditka and the Fridge and Dan Hampton and Mike Singletary. I think more guys from that team are head coaches in the NFL than any team ever.
And some of them are no longer with us.
Yeah, Peyton and Dave Duerson, who suffered from the brain injury, killed himself a couple years ago in Florida. It's a really tragic story.
297-5633, your number outside the area. It's 877-217-5757. And we're visiting with journalist Rich Cohen, who has written for the likes of Rolling Stone, Vanity Fair, and has the cover story in National Geographic, Sugar Love, about addiction to sugar and what it does as far as posing a colossal healthcare threat in the world today. We'll talk with Rich Cohen about sugar, a not-so-sweet story, when we return after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF. 297-5633 is your number. Rich Cohen, the guest, one of the most prolific nonfiction writers in the world today, a writer of books, magazine articles, even screenplays, and his latest work is the cover story of the August issue of National Geographic, Sugar Love. The world is consumed with sugar, and this is something that is not a Johnny-come-lately story, but I don't think we knew about the dangers of sugar until very recently, Rich.
Well, you know, we knew Americans were having a lot of health problems, and a lot of it was attached to fats, heart disease and obesity. And there has been a big effort to sort of bleed fat out of our diet. And in many cases, the fat was taken out of foods and replaced by sugar. So sugar used to bulk things out as a preservative, and we've sort of increased our intake of sugar, and it turns out that the problem might really be the sugar. We eat so much sugar, 77 pounds a year for the average American, and a lot of it goes right into our liver, which can't process it all and becomes sort of damaged, and then that results in something called metabolic syndrome, which a third of all Americans have, and that will lead eventually to high blood pressure, diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and a lot of other ill health effects.
Well, we're the biggest sugarcane producer in the United States right here in Louisiana, and I know some folks are listening who are probably connected to this industry. And sugar in moderation is actually not a bad thing, is it?
No, it's a good thing. It's like the general rule for life, I think, is everything in moderation. And the problem is that it's not in moderation right now, and a lot of people are eating a lot more sugar than they even realize because it's in foods you don't associate it with. So you're eating no-fat yogurt, which has a tremendous amount of sugar. And I think the cure to it is just if people take care to figure out how much sugar they're eating and then try to control the amount, they'll be a lot better off.
And the average American consumes over 70 pounds of sugar each year. Isn't that a good figure?
Yep, 77 pounds a year. And then there's, you know, a lot of it's high fructose corn syrup. There you have cane sugar, which is, you know, the oldest traditional way that sugar was refined going back 10,000 years to New Guinea, and then beet sugar and high fructose corn syrup, which is a little bit different but still basically the same thing, and that's what's in most soft drinks.
And sugar is also in glasses of milk. If you look on the cartons of milk that you purchase, you'll find that dairy products have sugar
right
in them. Why do we need sugar in dairy products?
In many cases, it's a preservative. It actually causes things to last longer. It makes things that might not taste that good taste good, like skim milk, you know? So that's what I mean by you wouldn't even know. You're saying, where are those? I'm not eating 77 pounds of sugar here. Where's it coming from? That's where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're having a bowl of cereal in the morning. The cereal has added sugar. The milk has added sugar. And then your, you know, juice has added sugar.
And, of course, if you go to a bar or you go home and have a beer or two or three, you're getting a substantial quantity of sugar, aren't you?
Yep, lots of sugar. And it's just, and especially when it comes as liquid, it just hits your liver so hard so fast, it's just hard for your system to cope with it. It overwhelms you.
Do you think this is the biggest healthcare threat in America today?
Well, I haven't really studied enough of the other things, you know, but it seems to me that this could be the key thing. If what the guys I interviewed, the scientists I interviewed, saying is correct, and I believe it is correct, then, you know, one of the guys, Dr. Richard Johnson, said whenever he studies any disease back to its first cause, it seems to lead him to sugar. So even something like when I was a kid, I remember my father couldn't have salt. Mm-hmm. It turns out that salt was a problem only because of the damage that sugar had done probably to his liver, thereby making it unable to process the salt. So a lot of things are really, that our health problems are secondary effects from too much sugar.
And as much sugar as we consume, so you say 77 pounds on the average for each American each year, it was even worse at one time in this country, wasn't it?
Well, there was a boom, I think, right around the early part of the century, the early 1900s. And in Britain, at one point, they're up to 100 pounds a year. And then it came back down, and now it's gone back up. You know, before, for many years, for hundreds, thousands of years, there was no sugar in the European diet at all. So diabetes might have existed, but no one would know it. It wasn't there. And for a long time, when diabetes appeared, they couldn't figure out where it was coming from or what was causing it until finally doctors figured out, connected it to sugar. And that's now a similar thing is happening with other things like high blood pressure, and type 2 diabetes and heart disease are being connected to sugar.
Hmm. How do we compare as a country with other countries in consumption of sugar?
We're right up there at the top. You know, so we have a lot of sugar and we have a lot of high fructose corn syrup. There's other countries that also have a lot, but we're at the very top.
And sugar is, of course, in products like pasta, right?
Yep, and your body will, you know, carbohydrates, your body breaks down and converts into sugar. So it all becomes sort of fructose. Sugar is sucrose, and in cane sugar, for example, it's like fructose is, 50, you know, one molecule of glucose, one molecule of fructose. And the problem is the fructose. Glucose is processed by cells all over your body. Fructose goes right just to your liver, and it actually depletes the cells that are converting it into energy, and it actually results in this crash that people know when you have a sugar crash. And the cure to the sugar crash, of course, is more sugar. Hmm. And that's how you become addicted to things.
What about bread?
Bread as a carbohydrate, it's like the same issue where it becomes sugars in your body.
So at some point, Rich, will we have the same kind of warnings about sugar that we have about tobacco and salt, or is sugar still considered in moderation a good thing and not as much to get worked up about as these other things?
My thought is that sugar in moderation is going to always be fine. Sugar is basically a good thing, but just too much of it, like too much of anything, can be a bad thing. In the case of sugar, too much of it can be a very, very bad thing. So some of these doctors, like Dr. Robert Lustig, he says that sugar is toxic, and people get worked up about that. What he means is sugar in the amounts it's being consumed is toxic. It actually will damage you. So, but the good news is a lot of the damaging effects caused by sugar, if you stop eating so much of it, they go away and your body recovers.
Mm-hmm. How much sugar do we need?
That's a big debate, and that's one of the reasons why you haven't seen the government come out and make warnings or put specific amounts. No one can agree. You know, there's a big sugar lobby, there's sugar manufacturers, and there's also doctors, and no one can agree on what the right amount is. My guess is it's going to be very little sugar, and it's probably going to be like around the amount in a can of Coke a day.
One
the problem is, what if it's less than a can of Coke a day? What happens to the soft drink industry? So that's, I think, the big question. I think our bodies have evolved in such a way that a little tiny bit of sugar, we do a lot with that. It gets stored as fat, and we go a long way on that. We're like the equivalent of a car that can go 500 miles on a gallon of gasoline, and that was a huge advantage at a time when, say, there was no gasoline, there was no sugar, and we just a little bit going a long way was a huge advantage, but now we're sort of swimming in a sea of it, and we can't process it all.
You know, in discussions through the years with Jack LaLanne, and I had many of them, he always said that sugar was the biggest culprit to longevity. He lived to be 96, and some say, well, you know, there are others who lived longer than he did who had bad habits. Well, Jack had people in his family die in their 30s and 40s, including his father, and he said he didn't have a piece of cake from 1930 until his death a few years ago. Now, there's some people who might be willing and eager to do that, but most of us have a sweet tooth to the point where every now and then we're going to break down.
Yeah, and I think you have to. I do agree with Jack LaLanne, you know, and I do think that also, you know, there's huge disparities between people. Some people's bodies just work differently than others. Some people can deal with it better than others. But as a rule, if you can keep your sugar very, very low, I think you're going to be much more healthy. But the fact is we do have this sweet tooth, and the stuff is good. And if you try to be overly strict about it, I think that's when you sort of really fall off the wagon in a big way. I think there is a place, you know, a couple times a week, in my opinion, to have good dessert. It just shouldn't be something where we're eating that stuff all day.
Catherine on Segan Lane. Catherine, good morning. You're on with Rich Cohen.
Good morning.
Yes.
Hi.
You're on the air, Catherine. You're on the air.
Good morning. Rick, have you addressed naturally occurring sugars, and should one be limiting that, such as stuff in strawberries, blueberries, cantaloupe?
Okay, you're breaking up a bit, but she said strawberries and blueberries, are those, are they fraught with danger?
The fruit's interesting because fruit is sugar, just like, you know, that's where the sugars come from. They come from sugar cane. But the difference with fruit has a lot of good things in it, too. And sugar is just one of the things. When we process sugar, you just take the sugar out, and you don't get the rest of the fruit. So you could get fat just by eating fruit, but a little bit of fruit every day is going to be good for you because of all the other good things in it. And also, it takes time to eat fruit. And fruit takes time to break down, and it enters your system more slowly. Whereas if you have the equivalent amount of sugar in a soft drink, it enters your system almost immediately. So fruit is good, but, you know, and the riper the fruit, the more sugar. And, you know, you just shouldn't binge on it or have too much of it. But I don't think, I think fruit was a good thing. It is a good thing and always will be a good thing.
Veronica in Denham Springs. Veronica, you're on the air with Rich Cohen.
Hi. The cardinal sin in Louisiana is sugar and fat. In fact, we like deep fat frying our carbs. Is that more of a concern?
I think that, well, this is one of the things. If we've been told for years that the problem is fat. And it turns out that, you know, the problem might be even more than fat, sugar. And as people have eaten less and less fat in their foods, even less, you know, fried foods, less French fries, that's often been replaced with sugar. So, I mean, I don't think that eating three fried meals a day is ever going to be good, but I think that probably, you know, a little bit of that and a lot less sugar would be beneficial.
Cover story is Sugar Love in the National Geographic magazine. Despite our bad habits, though, we still live longer than we used to. Why are we advancing in age despite the fact that we're consuming more things that in more quantities that are bad for us?
Well, this is the thing that's interesting. I'm not really somebody who's anti, you know, all the new foods and all the industrialization of food that we eat, because the fact is the numbers of people that are supported and living on our food system compared to how many people were around 100 years ago, it's almost unthinkable. And we do live longer, and that has to do with a lot of things that we've gotten rid of, like smoking and health care, you know, the way people take care of themselves. Now we look at things that still remain a big problem, and it turns out it's sugar, so we're improving a situation that's improved. So I think generally, you know, our lives are getting longer and longer, and some of these things that we might not have even noticed because we might not have been around, now we start to turn our attention to, like, what is causing this huge epidemic in type 2 diabetes, something that was, I think, 5% of Americans had in, you know, 1980, and we're now up to, like, over 20%. And we look at it, it's sugar.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're a wildly creative writer on many topics. Why did you embrace this topic?
Well, I'm sort of personally connected to the history of sugar, I feel, because my grandfather invented the sugar packet. He was a counterman at a Brooklyn diner, and he was sort of disgusted by the communal sugar bowls, which he thought were unhygienic. And he got an old tea bag machine, and he converted it to make the first sugar packet. And then later on, about 10 years after he opened a little packing company, he wanted to pack something of his own. And he was always on a diet and always wanted some alternative to sugar, and he invented Sweet and Low. And to me, like Sweet and Low and then all the products that come out of it and after it, like Splenda and Equal and the rest, that's sort of a response to the massive overuse of sugar. It's sort of the cure to sugar is artificial sugar. So I felt sort of like I had a vested interest in the history. I felt like my family story was connected to the big story of sugar.
But those things, too, are dangerous at times, aren't they? Sweet and Low,
well,
Splenda.
It's part of the thing with the reason why, for example, Sweet and Low works is it's saccharin is so much sweeter than sugar that you can have just a tiny little bit to get the same amount of sweetness. As a result, we just eat a lot less of it. If we ate 77 pounds of it a year, it would be, I'm sure, a huge problem. But the fact is, it hasn't, you know, there have been some issues with Equal and aspartame, but no one's really shown that it's really been a problem. And if it is a problem, it's less of a problem than 77 pounds of sugar a year.
Rich Cohen, Tulane University, class of 1990. And belated happy birthday, by the way.
Oh, yep, that was yesterday. Thank you.
Well, the first time I ever read anything by you, I think, was a story in Vanity Fair entitled Becoming Adolf.
Yeah.
Talk about an interesting topic, especially from a Jewish man.
Uh-huh. I just had this idea in my head. I went to my editor and said, I'd like to just grow a Hitler mustache and just wear it around and see how people react. That was my idea. And I was interested in the idea that one historical figure could basically knock a facial hairstyle off the table forever. You know, no one's ever going to wear, really, a Hitler mustache again. It was called a toothbrush mustache before Hitler. So I sort of wrote about the history of when people started wearing them, you know, how they became a fashion trend, how they got to Germany, what happened, you know, when Hitler started wearing it. Hitler, you know, some people think that people didn't take Hitler seriously because he looked too much like Charlie Chaplin because of that mustache. And then, you know, what happened to me when I wore it around New York and how people reacted.
Not very well, right?
Well, usually they would react by averting their eyes or pretending they didn't see me. You know, they didn't say anything about it. And I even ran into a friend of mine on the street in Manhattan, and I talked to her for about 5 minutes. And then I said to her, "Do you realize that I'm wearing a Hitler mustache?" And she said, "Oh, I didn't want to say anything. I thought you liked it."
Well, Rich Cohen, a tremendous talent, and his latest work is Sugar Love, the cover of the National Geographic magazine for August. And certainly, Rich, we look forward to talking with you about the Bears later this year.
Awesome. Thank you.
Take care. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, for J.C. Kane, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.
This is Jimmy.